Ben Fagan here with another episode of Career Cash, the podcast. And on this episode, I'm joined by former Lynn track and cross-country runner, now PhD student focusing in epidemiology at LSU, Sarah Northup. And on this episode, Sarah and I talk about how to leverage failure, how to have tough conversations, and why it's okay to not have it all figured out. It's an awesome conversation. Let's get to it. Well, Sarah, I'm super excited for this episode for a multitude of reasons. You have a super cool story and you're doing a lot of cool things. So why not just catch us up with all of that? But first, welcome to the show. I'm happy to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is actually the first podcast I've ever done. So this will be very interesting. So I guess to give you kind of a background of where I'm at, I graduated from Lynn with my undergrad in biology. I did the three-year program. Are they still offering that, by the way?
Yep.
They are? Okay. Really recommend you save a lot of money and get good experiences through that. So I graduated and I really wanted to go to PA school to be a physician assistant. I applied during my last year at Lynn, did not get in anywhere. So I was like, oh, first failure, what do I do now? So I ended up moving up to upstate New York and I started working as a PCT, patient care tech, at a med-surg floor at Thompson Hospital. It's a community hospital just out in the middle of nowhere. So worked there for a little bit, had opportunities to travel, which was very fun. Applied again, I got into PA school this time, and I moved up to LAU Brooklyn, which is one of their separate campuses off of Long Island. So it's about like Fort Greene, downtown Brooklyn area. And I got there super excited. I was also still able to compete cross country and track. And while I was at Lynn, I did the same thing and I had years left of eligibility. So I was going to do my PA school. I was going to run, you know, have a great time. And then I got there and I hated it. I was like, oh God, what do I do? This is the worst. I've been, you know, chalking myself up. Like everyone asked me in my undergrad, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to PA school. I'm going to be a physician assistant. Because that's what most undergrads do for, at least for my biology program, the one I was in, everyone was there for mostly healthcare. And I'm like, I've told all these people I've wanted to do this, and this is not what I want to do. This is not my dream anymore. Because I was not doing well at my sports and I was not doing well academically. And they basically sat me down. They're like, you need to choose. You can't run. You can't go do PA school at the same time. And I'm like, well, what do I choose? Do I stay with something I've loved since I was, you know, in high school and that I went to college for? And then I picked the school also because they had a program that I could go to. Or do I do something I've never known and just hope I like it? And I was like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm just going to say no and cry about it a little bit, like really question my existence, you know, and have to face all these people asking me how PA school's going when I'm not in PA school anymore and see what else I can do. But I didn't want to waste the semester because I had just moved from, you know, upstate New York to New York City. I'm like, well, I'm kind of stuck. What do I do now? So I looked at what I did this actually. And I was sitting in a PA school like class, like for cardiology, for EKGs. And I was Googling at the same time, like what other programs they had? Cause I'm like, I gotta fix this. I gotta do something. So I found that they had a public health program. I found one of the professors and I walked into her office. And I was like, hi, I need help. And she convinced me. She just did me this whole spiel about public health, what it was. I had no idea what it was. And I was sold. I'm like, okay, I'll do this instead. So I switched and I finished my master's in public health. I was able to run indoor, outdoor track, cross country, all that stuff. Saved a little bit of myself. I didn't think that I would end up being as successful as I was. And then I graduated and then I applied everywhere. I applied in New York City. I applied back in Florida because that's where I grew up. And I applied in upstate New York. Everyone said no. No one would give me a shot. And then finally I got into doing research as a clinical research coordinator for a psychiatry outpatient back in upstate New York. I did that for a little bit. And then I ended up meeting someone really wonderful there who had worked at the University of Rochester, and she was telling me all about her past clinic she was at, and she was going to go back, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. So I applied, and I got in into their position that they were offering, and then COVID hit. So our infectious disease research unit is focused exclusively on infectious diseases, so that's all flu, RSV, and then COVID became a big deal, and all research was shut down all through the university all over the United States. And the only thing that was going on was COVID. And we picked up doing research for AstraZeneca for their vaccine trial. And then we also did a lot of other research up to currently now. We worked on every single vaccine there is out there for every COVID one that you can get. So that's like Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer, all of those. And now we're kind of really focused on that. And I recently just left on Wednesday last week because I accepted a position to go back to school to get my PhD in epidemiology focused on infectious diseases and vaccine preventable diseases. And that's where I'm kind of at now, just to give you a catch up. That was a really long answer.
No, I love that. This is a huge reason why I was so excited. And previously, we spoke last week. I got the brief rundown like this, but it is equally as exciting to hear about all the cool things that you're up to. But one of the things I want to jump back to is, like you talked about, that kind of like, oh, crap moment. Like, oh, man, like this, this is really what I want to do. Outside of not getting into school on your first try, right away. So can you kind of walk me through, like, what were those feelings like when you were back in those days where it was like, dang, like, I don't know if this is really what I want to do. Cause I imagine that's a big challenge especially when you're telling everybody, hey, look what I'm doing. And that's not where I want to go anymore. So how'd you work through that?
Yeah. Oh God, it was so hard. And I remember there was at least one or two, if not more people from Lynn who reached out to me saying, how's PA school going? I'm like, oh God, like, what do I do? It was really hard. And I fell back on sports because that's what had carried me through my undergrad and had carried me through high school in lots of difficult times. And I'm like, well, I think I have to trust my gut. And usually that's not something I would normally fall back on. Like, academics was always first for me. It wasn't a question of what I could rely on. But in this sense, I was like, I have no experience with PA school, and I know if I push through and I do this, because I had worked on a med-surg floor before, at Thompson, and there were certain things that I absolutely didn't like at all. There's some things I liked a lot, and I'm like, in reality, like, you're going to end up dealing with more of the things you don't like, so if you don't like this at least 100%, you're really not going to enjoy yourself, and you're going to end up wanting to switch your careers or really, grind yourself down and do something you really don't like. And I don't think that's a fair thing to do when we're really doing a good switch on mental health nowadays, which is great. So I think it was, a very similar experience where it's like, okay, I need to think about me and not think about, what my parents want, what all my friends and my professors who wrote my recommendations want. It's more about how will I get through life and not hate it.
Mm. And was this something that you kind of discovered on your own? Were these conversations that you had with other people? How'd you get to that realization?
I remember one of the first phone calls I did was with, I think it was my dad and my grandma. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one was first at this point. And I remember my dad, I was just, a little bit more, like, keep yourself together, don't cry. But with my grandma, I bawled my eyes. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, like, help. And then she really just kind of, it's like, you really need to think about this for yourself. Like, you don't need to do this for us because we're still proud of you anyway. You got to, like, look out for you. Like, we know you're smart. We know that you have all this handled and you're a hard worker. You have to do this for you. And I also talked with my coaches as well there, and they really helped. I kind of got a really good mix from everybody. I even talked to brand new teammates I've known for like 2 or 3 weeks, and old teammates from Lynn as well, like, really helped me a lot.
That's awesome. And it's so important to establish this idea. I refer to it as your corner, just like the same in boxing. At the end of the round, you go back there, you get your water, get the blood wiped off your face, whatever it is, you put back in, and then to, get sent out for another round. And I think it's important to know also, like, you don't have to have 100 people in your corner. If you do, great, but it's important to have at least one person to help you through, these ups and downs. And I think that's huge. Going back to that moment where you didn't get into PA school initially, and was that the first major failure that you encountered, or was this, how was that experience?
So that was my very first time I applied to PA school. I would say that was like my first major failure because I had all these big dreams and things that I really thought I had to do. And this was the first like big no. I mean, there have been plenty of other no's in my life before that. That was the first big no. And then I was like, okay, try again. And I did, and I got in. And in a similar fashion, actually for my PhD, I applied when I was finishing my master's, and I was denied all access to the United States schools. But one school I did apply to was King's College in London. Got in, but I didn't get a scholarship for it. And I was like, I cannot afford this. And actually, that application ended up helping me. So a failure really did come back and help me later on, because I wrote a research proposal about how infectious disease like pathogens can emerge from different human and animal interactions in different countries. So I was focused on Africa because my advisor that I had identified that was going to help me, she had done a lot of research in sub-Saharan Africa. So looking at how those interactions force out a potential new pathogen, disease, endemic or pandemic like we have. And that was, I wrote that end of 2018, beginning of 2019. And then the pandemic became a thing. And so then when I applied again for my next PhD, the big challenge that I got from a lot of schools was, well, now infectious diseases that are cool and the pandemic's cool and so is COVID-19, so why are you interested? And then literally took out the receipt. So I'm like, I wrote this like 2 years ago almost, and this was way before a pandemic hit, so I'm interested, like, take me seriously. So a fair ended up helping me out, and I got in. So I applied to two schools separately and failed twice for my PA, got in, failed twice for PhD, and finally got in again. So failure works out. It helps you with those receipts in the long end.
And was that something that you had, you growing up, that kind of stick-to-itiveness, the ability to bounce back and deal with failure? Was that from sports? Where do you think that came from?
Oh, I think that definitely came from sports, because my dad definitely was like, you can't just go to school and do nothing. You got to pick a fun activity. Didn't have to be sports, but sports is what I picked. He's like, you can't be lazy. You need to do things. That was, I think, also to make sure that we stayed out of trouble and were busy, which it worked. We were very busy. But I really think that he drove that home, because I remember that whenever I first started cross country, he was like, okay, well, you're getting good. This is great, but we're not going to put money into this until you're serious and you put the hard work in. Because I remember I was racing against girls, I think my freshman year of high school, like just in my trainers. I didn't have spikes yet, because my dad's like, you got to work hard and you got to get a certain time and then we'll buy you racing spikes, that type of thing. So it just started with those little things that, like, I had to make milestones and work hard on my own for my dad to be like, all right, great, here's your reward. Keep working hard. You're doing great, type of thing. So it was definitely sports and my family that instilled that from the start.
So I have a question, a little off base, but still extremely relevant. Why cross country? What was it about cross country that got you going?
Actually, I started cross country because my older sister, she had switched from doing cheerleading because cheerleading was okay, but some of the girls were bullying her and it was a little mental health issues, but you know, back then wasn't really addressed, type of thing. So she switched to the next best thing, which she's like, oh, I guess I'll run. And then when she was running, I came in while she was a senior in high school and I was a freshman, and I was like, well, I can do that. I can beat her, I think. So I joined cross country because I wanted to beat my sister. And I did, and I was like, okay, well, I guess it's fun, so keep going. And that's kind of how it started out. Just because I wanted to beat my sibling, because, you know, back then I have three sisters, so we were very much like, we liked each other, but it was more of like, oh, like, I want to see what I can do better than you. And of course now we have a much better relationship. So
no, I totally get that. My brother, I have an older brother, and we are equally as competitive, and I want to get my doctorate for no other reason, just to one up him. We're playing the first one to 11 degrees, win by two, and I think he's up like 3-2 right now. So you know, PhD would be worth 2 points. So it's definitely for me, but it's not for the right reasons, not to grow academically. It's just to beat my brother. So I totally get where you're coming from that. So jumping back to where you currently are now, what I think is so interesting about this particular environment that we're all living in now and the work that you're doing is it comes with a lot of, controversy can be the word that you use around it. And And that brings a lot about a lot of difficult conversations. And when you're talking about whether it's vaccines, whether it's, you know, the status of COVID and everything, how do you go about having these difficult conversations? Is that a skill that you developed? Is that something that you were almost forced to have? Or is that something that you, you know, a skill that you believe you had, you know, internally?
So during a lot of those types of conversations, we kind of have to analyze it and see, is this person going to willingly, you know, communicate openly with me and we'll have an open-ended conversation, be able to discuss things? Or is it more of, all right, we need to get Dr. Fauci or Dr. Branch to come in because that's a higher authority of respect that they'll immediately listen to. So kind of first analyze the situation. And I think every single one of my career paths have kind of developed that as it goes, especially it was such a quick development with COVID becoming so politically talked about. It became extremely difficult because it used to be just, you know, easy, simple, talk about the medical pros and cons, benefits, what to expect. But then it really became the biggest thing. And I think the two things that I went in always usually with conversations was like, okay, this person doesn't know me at all. So number one, build trust. Number two, you know, I have to communicate in a way that they'll understand and relate to. And you kind of, once again, have to step back and analyze the situation. A good example of that was when we were doing our AstraZeneca trial, we had a lot of individuals sign up to do it because we enrolled over 400 people at our site, you know, based upon the fact that this was not an mRNA sequenced vaccine. This was based on an adenovector. So they were like, okay, this vaccine is not going to change my DNA. So therefore, I want to be in your vaccine trial. I'm like, well, that's wonderful. I'm so glad you want to be in it. However, let me just talk to you about that really quickly. And in that sense, I had a particular person who had that opinion. And in order to change that opinion, the only way I was able to do that was through trust. Because she ended up, because this was a placebo-controlled trial, you could either get vaccine or you would not. And by the end of it, when we unblinded people, you would receive vaccine eventually after the fact. But during that time, she had received placebo after we had unblinded her and she got COVID. And so when you got COVID while you were in our trial, we would have you come in and during these illness visits and we would see you. These illness visits go on over 28 days and I see you 4 to 5 times. So it took her seeing me 4 to 5 times dressed up in my shield and my blue gown, all of that, for her to be like at the very end where she was no longer shedding any virus and she was negative and I could come in my scrubs and talk to her, that she was like, you know, I really trust you now. Like, I totally get it. Like, I think I've really changed my mind, but like taking 28 days to do that is kind of hard, but if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. And you really got to do it. And the whole second part of it, you know, communicating in a way that they understand, you just really have to look at their knowledge base and establish what is their type of what I call health literacy. Like, do they understand like certain terms that you would use like in medical language versus, okay, they're not going to understand whenever I say it in this way, but if we talk about it in a different perspective that they understand or relate it to, like, you know, how they go about their lives, then it doesn't fall on deaf ears and you get better attention.
So how do you go about analyzing, you know, and detecting which kind of language to use? What is the biggest tactic in that?
First off, you know, whenever I'm enrolling someone into a trial and they've read over the consent and all of that, we have to ask what their occupation is, what they do, what their past experiences are. And on top of that, I mean, there's required questions you need to ask, but then ones that you don't need to. But during the whole session where I sit down and we enroll them in a trial, which takes about, you know, 2 hours worth of their time, I'm asking questions the whole time to kind of, I don't want to say not dig around into their life or anything, but just see how much they want to open up to me and see where they land on like that spectrum and kind of really dig deeper into like what they know, what they don't know, and how open they are to learning. And you can really get a feel for that the more you talk to people, especially if you like work in sales, it becomes second nature and you can really do it. And when you work in healthcare, especially when you've worked in different sections like I have, some people are interesting. Like, typically, this is will happen in our older population. I'll ask, okay, do you have any, current medical history or past recent medical history that's significant that you would like to report to us? And they'll say, nope, I'm good. I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking, all right, let's ask what your medications are. And they're like, all right, so what's your medications? What do you take? And they're like, oh, I take this for my diabetes. I take this and I'm on Metoprolol, all this stuff. I'm like, so you have high blood pressure? No, I take medication. And I'm like, okay, so you still have it. It's that type of thing that you really have to establish. And you don't want to make them feel that they don't understand like the questions you just asked. You're like, oh, okay, you take these medications. So what do you take that for? Okay, well, like, let's write that down. So it's just simple things like that. You really get used to it as you go through the process.
Has there been anything that you've gathered along the way that's helped you in building the trust? Because I think what's so cool about this is while you're using it in the healthcare realm, like you mentioned, it does tie into sales, it ties into business, it ties into anything, because at the end of the day, mm-hmm. people are working with people, and no matter your job, it's all, so much of it is life really is based off communication, and trust is a huge part of that. So has there been anything that you've kind of gathered to help you build and establish that trust?
So there's been a lot of work on a team basis for the unit I was working for. Dr. Falzi was really tying in with a bunch of the other investigators across the U.S. And it even came down like from Dr. Fauci, like we really need to push to have a role of diversity in these clinical trials. We have to represent every American, every person that lives in this country so they can trust the process that's going on. So from that, she really pushed for us to be involved with local community members. So it kind of came down from like the upper management in my unit all the way down to us. So then when we reached out to those community leaders, then they're like, okay, if I could bring in these people that are willing to participate and want to know more, they just need to talk to people. And they would come in and we would establish that trust. So it really was like a team effort of like the top really talking to the stakeholders in the community, those who make the big difference in order to really make that impact.
That's so cool. So I know you have your PhD coming down the pipeline. What else do you have moving forward, big, big goals that you have that you're working towards now?
Oh, big goals. Oh, so many things. It would be so nice to get a lot of things done. Number one, like I'm working in the unit I'm at, like I have really developed this love of like vaccine preventable diseases, because not only did we work on like the vaccine trials, we also did inpatient trials for patients who had COVID, and we were doing drug treatments that could possibly help them. This is where individuals who were either intubated or had certain oxygen needs. So that has really like pushed me, like we need to make this as such a common thing. I saw this fun little post actually recently. If you grew up in the 90s, you know that when you see like one of those 8-pack like plastic things that go on like cans, what do? As soon as you see it, you are like, oh, I gotta cut it, gotta save a sea turtle type of thing. Like if we can make like, oh, gotta get my vaccines, it's important to save my life and like the kid next door who has cancer who can't get that vaccine, like we need to make that second nature. So that's like really my goal, to make like public health not questionable anymore, and to make vaccines just like this is a needed thing, like, and just to make health like more obtainable, like in that sense, because the amount of people that, you know, that have died this year, it's just, you know, it's kind of, it's silly and it's sad that it's happened. And I would really like to focus on the things that we actively have solutions for and prevent. But as far as other goals, I don't know. We'll have to see, because I haven't started yet. And I've been promised the great prospects of looking at all these new data sets of looking at like the impacts of COVID on populations who have immune compromised diseases, and like such as HIV and stuff like that, just to see what their potential outlook and outcomes are throughout their life if they did also have a diagnosis of COVID-19. So, those are the goals for now. I'm sure that'll change and there'll be more to come, but I think that's enough for me to focus on for a PhD for now.
No, definitely. And I have every confidence in the world that you're going to make, you know, great positive impact in whatever you choose to do, whatever route you end up going down. So it is that time of the show where it's the bittersweet moment for me, because I love having these conversations, but we're here to wrap it up. And it's the sweet part, because it's your time to cash out. And so you're going to leave us with your biggest, most valuable piece of advice. Leave the people with a little money for the road. So what do you have for us today, Sarah?
Oh, that's, I have a lot, but I have a lot of individual little things. But I think number one that I've been recently realizing is that we're all adults, but we don't know what we're doing sometimes in terms of like how to get there, not in our own skills. Like we usually have the confidence in our own skills and our knowledge and our intelligence of what we're doing. But sometimes like the path to get there and stuff that we have to do, I'm like, oh God, like I thought whenever I was a kid, the adults knew what they were doing. I don't know what I'm doing. And it's just okay to not know. And like, and that happened a lot to me as I was going through my career, all these different fun failures that were thrown around and ways I had to change my path. But we all don't know what we're doing, but we'll get there eventually. So it's a fun ride. It's been okay for now.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's such a beautiful thing, and I think such a freeing sentiment and a valuable piece of advice. So, Sarah, this was an absolute blast. I'm so excited to hear all the great things that you're doing. Like I said, I know you're gonna do awesome things here in the future. So, thanks so much for coming on today.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.